hello, hello, my friends. Welcome to episode number 486 of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Folks, we are sowing the seeds of change this week. We're talking about growing innovation in the face of supply chain challenges and how a team of researchers at the University of Florida grew plants in lunar soil for the first time. So first, let's welcome friend of the show, Peggy Carriers from Avnet, this week to discuss why we can no longer decouple design from supply chain and the observations that Avnet learned from their recent Avnet Insights survey. Peggy and I also investigate how you can maximize your hardware footprint with software and how Avnet's visual libraries called Avail can help you with your next design. So without further ado, let's welcome Peggy. Hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Okay, so you guys recently did a global survey called the Avnet Insights Survey. So Peggy, tell me a little bit about the interesting things you discovered from this survey.
Yeah, so we really value our relationships with our global engineers, and we wanted to touch base with them. You know, the last 2.5 years have been so trying and so different and just unprecedented impact on the market, especially in semiconductors. So we wanted to touch base with our global engineering community to find out just what challenges they're facing when they're trying to design and get products to market and how we can help them with kind of solve some of those challenges.
Excellent. Now, I know a lot of my engineering audience is feeling pressure from a variety of sources these days. So can you tell me a little bit about how Avnet in particular is helping to relieve some of that pressure?
Yeah, you know, back to the survey, you know, 93% of our respondents said they're struggling with their designs today based on availability of products. That really wasn't part of the conversation 5 years ago. You know, you had a great design. You really could pick from a plethora of technologies and capabilities, and your toolbox was full. That's not so much the case now. With intermittent outages and supply chain challenges and constant disruptions, you know, that availability component of design is really a new phenomenon. So when we pivot over to what Avnet does, we really partner with our engineers, not only in creating the best fit for their products to get them to market efficiently and effectively, but also to consider that availability component of creating your bill of materials as far up in the design cycle as possible. And the reason why we do that is twofold. First of all, we want them to have the great potential to be able to get their products to market, but also sustainability is becoming more at the forefront with raw material shortages and having responsible design. We want to extend those product life cycles as much as possible. So to give that flexibility in that front end of the design, to reconfigure down the road without having to completely redesign the board, but only maybe change a smaller component of it. So those are some of the things that Avnet's working on.
That makes sense. Now, Peggy, as a distributor, how is Avnet helping engineers and suppliers navigate all of these supply chain and design chain issues?
Yeah, so on the design chain side, you know, we have over 1,800 engineers employed at Avnet in all of our regions. So we are considered a technical distributor, not just fulfillment. So on the design side, you know, we just have great people that have been there for a long time. We have very tenured people. We have new engineers coming in. So we stay on top of technologies. We've got application and technology specialists that help with specific areas such as, you know, power or RF or the MCU and things like that. But we also have great digital tools. So we have an online tool called Avail, and it's Avnet's visual libraries. And it's a complete online tool of over, I'd say we have about 150,000 block diagrams now. The engineer, our FAEs, work with our customers to do that full design on the front end so they can develop that solution, print out the bill of materials, look at risk analysis and, you know, what products have, you know, a lower tendency to go EOL based on availability. It also has a full PCB layout capability, and also it can generate CAD files. The great thing is we have this capability already in-house for our employees. We are pivoting that to a customer self-serve. So you'll see that later in this summer being on our digital portal. So engineers will have more flexibility and choice in their design. We're super excited about that. That's the design side. We can't decouple design from production. So at some point, once you've got your bill of material set, you've got to be able to get that to market. And that's where our supply chain teams come into play. So we've got great supply chain capabilities. We can do turnkey. We can support products going into an indirect mode, going into a contract manufacturer, and even moving from one region to another. So we have our supply chain teams. That's really the cornerstone of what we do, along with our design chain teams, helping our customers get their products to market faster, more efficiently, and effectively.
So Peggy, we're dealing with not just supply chain and design chain issues these days as an engineering community, right? What other industry issues do you see affecting our design lives these days?
Yeah, you know, pure logistics is an issue as well. Just getting your products from one place to another. That's been an issue for the last couple of years and still continues to be at the forefront. But the one thing that's really near and dear to my heart is sustainability and design. You know, a lot of the products in the semiconductor and interconnect passive and electromechanical component makeup is made up of raw materials that are limited natural resources. You know, they're limited and they're natural. So we have to be more responsible in our design. And there's different ways we can do that. And, you know, we're starting to see some great innovation come out. Being able to do that flex design, as I said earlier, extending your product life cycle, but also maximizing the footprint of your hardware through software. I've used the example in the past of a cell phone. And, you know, you have the same footprint on a cell phone today as you did, you know, 5-7 years ago. But the functionality is infinitely more complex and more robust today than it was 5 years ago. I see design innovation as really having to take more of a sustainable slant to be responsible and to drive designs into the future for all of us. You know, we want to leave the world a better place for all of us.
Absolutely, we do. So do you see these types of issues changing how we design in the future as well?
Yeah, you know, I liken it to Legos. I think things are much more modular than they used to be, meaning that, you know, when you have a next gen or a next rev, you can replace just a portion of your design rather than entire redesign. So that modular approach to design, I think, you know, we're already seeing it today with connected solutions. And really, like if you look at EV or some of the newer technologies, factory automation, a lot of that design is more modular based. And I think we're going to see that continue and evolve further.
I think you're right. Well, Peggy, I think that's all I have time except for the off-the-cuff question. Now, I'm going to throw a new one at you here, Peggy. So if you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would it be and why?
Gosh, what a great question. So I have a hero, and my hero is Helen Keller. And the reason why I would have Helen Keller to dinner is here's someone that faced almost insurmountable adversity in being able to communicate and to be part of the world. You know, the way she saw the world was different than the way the rest of the world existed. And she persevered through that adversity and succeeded and overcame so much adversity to really truly be an innovator in communication. She forced the world to see her differently. That's who I would have dinner with. An amazing, amazing innovator and human being.
I love that answer, Peggy. Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for now. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Amelia. Always great talking to you.
Did you hear that a team of researchers funded by NASA have grown plants in lunar soil for the first time? Okay, so this research project goes all the way back to the Apollo space missions, when astronauts visiting the moon brought back samples of lunar surface material called regolith. And now, 50 years later, for the first time, researchers from the University of Florida have successfully grown plants in that soil. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says this about this groundbreaking research. He says, This research is critical to NASA's long-term human exploration goals, as we'll need to use resources found on the Moon and Mars to develop food sources for future astronauts living and operating in deep space. This fundamental plant growth research is also a key example of how NASA is working to unlock agricultural innovations that could help us understand how plants might overcome stressful conditions in food-scarce areas here on Earth. Wow. Okay, so there are two specific questions at the heart of this new research. First, whether plants can grow in regolith, and how this research could someday help humans have an extended stay on the moon. And they got an answer pretty quickly to that first question. Yes, plants can indeed grow in lunar regolith, but can they grow as well or as robust as they do in Earth soil? No, but they can grow. So that second question may be getting closer to an answer. Okay, so what kind of plants are we talking about here? Well, specifically, it is the Arabidopsis thaliana, which is a relative of mustard greens and is native to Africa and Eurasia. So why is this plant so special? Well, for a couple of reasons. First, it is a small plant that is pretty easy to grow. But also, it is one of the most studied plants in the world. It has been used as a model organism for research in all areas of plant biology. And because of this, scientists already know how it behaves in different circumstances and what its genes look like. And now, how it will grow in space. So, how did they grow it? Well, to begin with, this team from the University of Florida actually used samples from the Apollo 11, 12, and 17 missions, and used only 1 gram of regolith for each plant. Then they added water and seeds to the samples. Then the trays holding the seeds were put into terrarium boxes in a clean room. On top of that, a nutrient solution was also added each day. And get this, it only took these seedlings 2 days to sprout. But on day 6, this team could see that these lunar soil seeds weren't growing quite like their control group counterparts. The lunar soil plants grew more slowly and had stunted roots. And they also had some stunted leaves and had a reddish pigmentation. After 20 days, the plants were beginning to flower, and at that point the team decided to harvest the plants and study their DNA. When they sequenced the RNA of these plants, some very interesting patterns revealed themselves. The RNA showed that the plants were indeed under some level of stress and had actually reacted the way researchers had seen them respond to growth in other harsh environments, like when the soil has heavy metals or too much salt. And do you know what else was interesting with these lunar soil samples? The plants actually reacted differently depending on what sample was used. Each sample was collected from different areas of the moon, and the plants grown in the Apollo 11 samples did not grow as robustly as the other two sets. So, will we be able to grow plants in lunar soil? Well, according to this study, maybe so. But this research, which was part of the Apollo Next Generation Sample Analysis Program, does pose a whole lot more questions, including, are materials from different areas of the moon more conductive to growing plants than others? Could studying lunar regolith help us understand more about the Mars regolith and potentially growing plants in that material as well? And can we understand how to reduce the stressful nature of lunar soil by adjusting the genes in those plants? Well, we'll just have to see. So, if you want even more information about this super cool study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you would like to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I understand. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, who would that be? Me. That's right. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help. Also, if you'd like any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or heck you just want to chat, shoot me a line at Amelia, that's AMELIA, at eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 17th, 2022, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.